to your committee administrator and a little bit of communication with Representative Butler before the meeting, and thought the issues of the greatest interest probably would be what we're doing at the department to help out with the deficit. We're trying not to make it any worse. And to talk a little bit about information sharing between the department and other state agencies.
Okay.
In aid of efficient government. So I'll start with what we're doing around the deficit. We had, during the 2001 regular session, during our budget hearings, made a commitment to generate an additional $27.9 million for the general fund. And then during the course of the second and third, I think, special sessions, committed to collect an additional $16 million this biennium without any additional resources. I'm very happy to report we are on track to meet both of those commitments. Generally, what the department does concerning collection of past due taxes is try to have a balanced approach toward tax administration, where we put some resource into supporting taxpayers who are trying to comply in the first place, because that is the vast majority of taxpayers, so that they have adequate, accurate, understandable instructions, telephone support, online support, so that they can file and pay timely and appropriately. We also do a little bit of outreach to taxpayer groups that may need a little more help. People who don't speak English as their first language struggle a lot with compliance, and so we have some outreach efforts there. We also work with the Internal Revenue Service and nonprofit organizations to support work that's done during the filing season to help people prepare returns. We have a telephone call center to help people answer questions, and then we use our website to get information out, as well as quite a number of paper-based information materials that that are prepared and distributed throughout the year. And then on what I call the back end of the system, which is after people have filed or should have filed, we work with taxpayers either auditing returns, collecting taxes that are reported to be due but have not yet been paid, or locating individuals who should be filing and are not, and get them to meet those obligations by filing and then paying whatever their liability is. Our long-term goal is to make sure that we get move taxpayers into the system and we keep them there, complying, filing timely and paying, and that effort is what brings in probably about 98% of the revenue that comes into the state through the income tax systems, both the personal income tax system and the corporate tax system. In the course of the audit work, we're reviewing returns that have been filed for accuracy and completeness, and to make sure that items of income, expense, credit or deductions have been properly reported and are substantiated. We use data from a variety of different sources to determine whether individuals should be filing if they have not, including the Internal Revenue Service, the Department of Employment, Motor Vehicles, and then research that the staff does to try to identify folks who should be filing. We do special projects when that's appropriate. If it appears there's a compliance issue that has arisen, two that we're working on currently include partnerships, and particularly non-resident partners of partnerships that are doing business in Oregon and making sure that they're filing, and corporation and self-employed filing. Our values around our collection process is to make sure that we're resolving a tax debt appropriately and that the taxpayer is reporting and paying what they owe, no more and no less. We have a variety of tools the legislature has given us over the years. We try to use those that are going to allow the taxpayer to have control over choices in their compliance. So we use payment plans as an option for people. And we also allow folks who are unable to pay because of their economic circumstances to make an offer to settle a liability if it appears that they're not going to be able to pay the whole amount that's due. We use incentives such as abating penalties. If people come forward, even though they are delinquent and haven't filed, as an encouragement to file and get back in compliance. On our extra revenue commitment, we've worked hard on speeding up our collection process. We've moved some people around so that they're working on some people who wouldn't normally be working on collections are working on collections to try and speed up the cash flow for the state. We're starting a new program that's been made available by the federal government called the Treasury Offset Program, where we can inform the Internal Revenue Service if we have someone who owes us income tax, state income tax, and if they're going to get a federal refund, we can have that refund sent to us in payment of their liability. We also use private collection agencies pretty extensively to help us with collection of delinquent tax. So that's sort of just a nice broad overview of what we're doing in the enforcement and collection area. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, because I have one. You're trying to collect $16 million. You're on track here, you say. How much is owed us?
Let's see. Well, we have it's like a revolving account, and at any given time there's about probably $200 million outstanding, and it comes in over time. We collect almost everything that's owed to the state. It just, some of it takes a certain amount of time in order to get it. If people are in bankruptcy, that stays collection. If they have appealed, if we'd assessed additional tax and they appeal that, we can't collect while that's being reviewed in the court process. So some of it is not available for collection right away. But everything that is available for collection, we've either got out to a collection agency or we're working those accounts. Some people we can't find. All the usual problems that any organization would have that's got accounts receivable.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions, Elizabeth. I can lump them together at the end, but I do want to question you here within the general government so that we have this information on the record.
Mm-hmm.
But my just a couple of questions that that I've touched on. As you participate in your national directors meetings with your other colleagues from other states, they developed some sort of an idea of the complexity of our taxation system and the complexity of the forms. Do we have an inordinate problem with the Oregon's forms in relationship to other states' forms?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I would say we're typical. Many states do as Oregon does, which is to piggyback on the federal form, so people need to calculate their federal tax first, and then our form takes advantage of a lot of information that's already been entered on the federal form, and people don't have to duplicate that. But our primary form is still double-sided with a lot of lines, as you know, because we have a lot of modifications that are individual to Oregon from federal taxable income. So every time you add either a modification to either an addition to something that's not taxed for federal purposes, but Oregon taxes it, or something that is taxed for federal purposes and Oregon doesn't tax it, or we give a credit for something, that adds complexity to the return. And the more calculation the taxpayer has to go through or documentation they have to provide, the more complexity and challenge it is for some taxpayers. There are some states that actually start, their return doesn't piggyback off federal, and they're longer returns than ours because the person actually has to start from scratch with total income and deductions and everything else.
The number of states that don't start from scratch is what, 20 or 30 states that don't start from scratch?
It's between 20 and 30 states that piggyback in some way on federal.
In relationship to our state and in relationship to other states, you compared the forms, and it appears that Oregon is about as complex as any of the others. Are there a higher frequency of errors in Oregon's returns, and Is that frequency of errors going down, or is it going up?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I have not got data on frequency of errors in other states in their income tax programs. What I can tell you is that as we have moved to more electronic filing, the error rate drops dramatically. And we are having a lot of success getting people to move to electronic filing.
Thank you. I'll ask other questions after your second half of your presentation.
Okay. Thank you.
Are these people's that are delaying their payments, is it because they're contesting that they owe it, or is it they made a mistake, or why do they want to wait so long to pay this money? Can we give them some incentive to get it sooner?
Well, Mr. Chair, there are a number of reasons why people don't pay. The primary one is they don't have the money.
That sounds logical.
If they have correctly reported, we see a lot of situations where a return will come in, the taxpayer has reported, I owe this money, I've had this much withholding, I still owe some amount, and I can't pay it right now. If we've audited a return, they've reported and said, I owe this much, and they've paid as much as they've said they owe, and if we audit a return and say, you owe more than you reported, then there's a time period within which they do have the ability to ask for us to review internally and for the court to review whether the adjustment we've made to their return is correct. And if they're going through that process, they may decide that they don't want to pay and then ask for a refund later. They may want to just wait and see if they don't have to pay at all. But most of the dollars that we have to pursue collection on are either taxpayers who have reported they owe the tax and have not paid it for some reason, or they haven't filed a return to begin with. And we've contacted them and said, we think you should be filing. We think this is what your liability is. And we may or may not hear back from them until we start a collection process. If someone has not filed returns for a period of years, it's quite a daunting task sometimes for them to get all their records together and get those returns filled out and filed so that we can figure out what their correct tax liability is. So sometimes it's that process of what's the right amount that you owe that takes some time. But for a number of people, especially now, the problem is they don't have the money. If they haven't had enough withholding while they were working, then it's a bit of a challenge for them.
Mr. Chair, is Oregon unique? I'm sure it's not unique, but again, comparing ourselves with others of the 20-plus states that have begin from federal, are we having greater or fewer percentages of participants in the collection program, or people that are falling out of the program because of Oregon's tax complexity? Do we know? Do you share that information amongst your colleagues when you meet on your national directors meetings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I have not seen any comparisons state by state on percentage of collections or percentage of taxpayers not in compliance. I've not seen that there's been an effort to try to do that state by state comparison. We do talk about general trends of what's happening, and for all the states right now, with the economy being the way it is, they're seeing lower prepayments, smaller amounts of withholding because of either higher unemployment or, as was the case here, we had a big part of the income that we were receiving from our income tax during the late 90s was coming from capital gains, and there aren't any anymore. So that just the amount of withholding and quarterly estimated payments has dropped because there's not as much taxable income being earned out there. Everybody is seeing that problem. People are seeing generally that it is a little more challenging to collect because of people being in either lower paying jobs than they were in or not working, and so it's harder for folks to pay. We haven't done a state-by-state comparison across.
Mr. Chair, could I ask specifically then, in Oregon, you say the trend is this and the direction appears to be this. Do you have you quantified that in numbers of returns that were deficient with payments for 2000 versus 2001? Is that information? It's my understanding the tax incidence model keeps that information fairly current. Do we have some indication before we hit, before the train wreck occurs, do we have some information to show that we're winding down faster or slower than we were in past years or in past recessions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, what we do is provide to the Office of Economic Analysis all the data that we have about receipts that are coming in. So we report to them monthly our total withholdings that are coming in from employers, total estimated tax payments that are coming in from self-employed filers, refund claims, and they take that information into account in determining figuring out the forecast.
Mr. Chair, we're not getting to it though.
Okay.
I don't need totals. I need to know. You're indicating that we appear to be slowing down. Our economy appears to be doing some other things. Quantifiably, I appreciate the fact that we're slowing down. Our mm-hmm. estimates are not coming in as fast.
Mm-hmm.
Tax returns are maybe slower. How much slower? What in relationship to the numbers of collection accounts, the number of accounts that are past due, the numbers that we're unable to find taxpayers that have slipped off the rolls and we're unable to locate them, are we 10% higher, 2% higher? Is that something that over from one year to the next that you? I know that you track the numbers of everything that comes through your offices.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, what we tend to track is the gross, is the dollars, because that's what's meaningful to the general fund and to the Office of Economic Analysis. I don't have for you numbers of returns. We can get that information. How many returns have came in during the last cycle, the last filing cycle, where there was tax due and no payment? I can get that information for you if you'd like it.
Director,
but I don't have
specifically,
it today.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
sure.
Specifically what I'm concerned about is this trend. I think intuitively we all understand that estimated payments will be down, that unemployment, people that are receiving unemployment are not paying the estimates of tax that they would owe on unemployment, which is not subject to state and federal withholding. I think intuitively I understand that could be the case. My concern is where are we moving up at the rate of 5% of per annum of uncollected accounts mm-hmm. over what we have been in the past, and nationwide? I assumed that you went to the directors' meetings and shared the information as to how many other states are up 5% versus 8% versus 10%. You know, those kinds of things on uncollectibles. People falling off the tax rolls and those kinds of things. I think intuitively we know that there are difficult times in the global recession. My concern is, are we faster, slower? Are we starting to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps? When will we? Where's the canary in the mine that's going to give us the information quicker than so that we can act on information as opposed to reacting to the economic downturn or the return to economic stability?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, if what you're asking for is a crystal ball, I don't have it.
I want numbers of returns
and
numbers of
what I can give you is last year's data, because we haven't started the processing season for this year. People won't be filing until, we hope, after the election, so that they're filing correctly.
I don't anticipate that you would have.
But I won't. I won't have data for this coming filing season.
Mr. Chair, but I'm after the increases of non-filers from if we had 20,000 non-filers last year, and that represented 0.5%. How many do we have this year, and what percentage does it? And then the same with the amounts, the dollar amounts that are outstanding on collections, settlements in process, those kinds of things. Dollar amounts, the 200 million mm-hmm. that you just talked about. Is it all current? Have we got an aging spread on it? Is that aging getting longer? The average day's collection out there in relationship to the amounts that are disputed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, let me go back and get some data for you and get that to you, okay?
Thank you.
Because some of what you're asking for we have, some of what you're asking for we probably don't have, but we'll try and get you data in those areas. looking back to last year and see if that is responsive and work with you to see if we can't come up with the information that you're looking for.
Any other questions?
Let's see, she's got a second half.
Okay, the other item of information for you today was sharing information with other agencies. The Department of Revenue by statute is prohibited from disclosing taxpayer information, and that statute extends to anything that is called a particular from a tax return or a report that's required to be filed with us. The statute goes on to explain that particulars includes name, address, social security number, any information about income, items of expense, or tax liability. We are permitted, again by statute, in very, very specific instances to share information. When it's appropriate for tax administration is the primary time, but we also are permitted to share with other agencies for very specific purposes. For example, we can share information with the Department of Employment and the Department of Consumer and Business Services for purposes of administration of our combined payroll tax programs. We can provide name, address, and employer information to the Division of Child Support in order to help them attempt to locate people who are delinquent on child support payments. We can share information on ability to pay for care to the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Division when they are they have custody of someone in a state institution and need to know whether the person that they have custody of has the ability to pay for part of the cost of that custody. And we can share timber tax information with the Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, and the Department of Forestry for purposes of investigating theft of timber. We can share very, very general high-level information with the governor's office, for example, can call us and ask whether someone who is being considered for appointment to a state board, commission, or a point of office is in compliance with the income tax laws. We share information with the Legislative Revenue Office that they need in order to be able to do the work that they do for the legislature in evaluating the potential revenue impact of legislation. But for the most part, we have to hold confidential data that we receive from individual taxpayers on their returns. We're also required under federal law to hold confidential all federal income tax information. And in fact, I just signed a compliance report to the Internal Revenue Service responding to a long series of questions about how the Department of Revenue protects the integrity and the security of federal income tax information that comes to us both in paper form and on in electronic form. So we're constrained by state law and constrained by federal law in what we can share of data that we have with other agencies in state government. We do take advantage of our ability to receive information from other agencies in order to help us in the area of tax administration. And that, as I mentioned before, Employment Department, the Internal Revenue Service, Motor Vehicles are agencies that we do receive information from to help us identify sources of income and individuals who should be filing, who may not be filing. There are criminal penalties for unlawful disclosure by the department, any employees of the department of income tax information. And there's also a practical challenge. We track especially individual taxpayers based on their social security number. And under federal law, there are substantial restrictions on the use of social security numbers for purposes other than tax administration. For us to be able to cooperate fully with other agencies, they also have to be able to use social security numbers to identify individuals. And employment is able to do that. Agencies that administer taxes are able to do that. But some, for example, licensing boards are not, and that has been a bit of an impediment for us in sharing information back and forth.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, and Director Archenko, that's my hot button.
I know that
for a long time. and I'm going to say something here that probably isn't going to be appreciated by my conservative colleagues, but the department is in possession of a rather vast amount of information, which is protected under 314835. But it's my understanding that additional information is available under .840 to certain agencies. And thank you very much for both Susan Browning and Jim Maneri for being responsive to my inquiries. I guess my concern is, and this is strictly just a hypothetical example. If a person were to file an Oregon income tax return that had a rather substantial amount of income, that person could, and it was self-employment income, not subject to reporting through Department of Employment anywhere, that person could, and at the same time they're filing that tax return, could go to a hospital in Oregon and receive Oregon Health Plan care, and the Department of Revenue would not cooperate with the Department of Human Services in the state of Oregon in identifying if that person had reported a substantial income. Is that correct or incorrect?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we don't have the authority, I think I'm tracking with you this time, we don't have the authority to report to the Department of Human Services income levels for any individuals relative to eligibility to receive benefits under the health plan. So the answer to your question is, your statement is correct, that if someone applies for the health plan and does not disclose to Department of Human Services that they have income from self-employment, we don't have the legal authority to disclose that information either.
Okay. And so this, continuing on with my hypothetical example, then, this person could have certificates from any number of licensure boards in the state of Oregon, and all of them for activities that are totally legal to do, and be a self-employed individual, not reporting through the Department of Employment, but be reporting truthfully, honestly, all of his or her income tax information, and could potentially own rather substantial amounts of property in any county in the state of Oregon, and could still receive Department of Human Services benefits as an unqualified individual receiving health benefits just by indicating that they did not have resources to pay for those benefits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not going to answer for the Department of Human Services on what testing they do for eligibility. What I can say is that if they came to the Department of Revenue and asked, can you tell us whether this person has income from or has some level of income that's been reported to you and what is it, we would not be able to share that information with the Department of Human Services.
And finally then, if I have that same person that had a number of different licenses, privileged licenses in the state of Oregon, you don't test the information between the Department of Revenue and that licensing bureau. In other words, if you have someone that has a CCB license, you don't test through the CCB's licensure to determine whether or not that person is filing a tax return?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we have been working in a cooperative way with the Construction Contractors Board on some issues, and I think that's in the memorandum that Susan provided to you. It's limited because they aren't using Social Security numbers in order to keep track of people, and so that information sharing opportunity has gaps in it. I will tell you that the legislature has given the department authority in the past. I mean, we have existing authority to ask a licensing board, if we have a taxpayer who is not in compliance and who, through all of our efforts, won't come into compliance, and we know that they have a license from a state licensing board, we can go to the licensing board and say, and ask for the board to suspend or revoke the license for failure to comply with the tax laws. And that's a remedy we use very sparingly, but it is something the legislature has given us the authority to do. We do not have a program whereby we can currently match the, say, for example, the list of all licensees of the Construction Contractors Board and run that against a list of all Oregon taxpayers, because they don't have Social Security numbers that they are able to collect along with those licenses that they issue, and the way that all of our systems are set up is driven off of Social Security numbers.
So, Mr. Chair, unfortunately, this just appears to be dragging it out. I don't want to do that much further, but there's somewhere between 350 and 500,000 privileged licenses issued by the state of Oregon through all the licensing boards and all of the other kinds of things. This doesn't include DMV, incidentally. Is there any matching program that's going on with regard to a high level of matching between those boards to determine if those folks, whether they're residents of the state of Oregon or not, but continue to renew their licenses every year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever is necessary? Is there any matching going on to determine whether those folks are filing tax returns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, no, there is no active matching program going on.
Okay. Director Archenko, the department has rather extensive responsibilities back with the counties and the property tax division, and you have a complete division of the property tax. I want you to know that in one of the counties that I have had the opportunity of representing, the assessor just opened the telephone book, and I don't know, maybe he had a high school kid come in and help out, whatever. The assessor opened the telephone book and went down the telephone book in that particular county and added 25% increase in the number of assessment accounts for businesses that are just listed in the yellow pages that weren't filing property tax reports. Mm-hmm. Now, if we have that kind of compliance issues in one county, is there some way that we could do some mix, merge, match, is what I've called it all these years, to see if we couldn't get more people in compliance with our income tax filing?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, there are probably a number of different ways to go about achieving a higher level of compliance by people who are licensed by the state. Doing a data match with a licensing board is one method. It's got challenges to it simply because of the way that we try to make sure that we've got the right person. I mean, we've got 1.5 million taxpayers or 1.5 million returns that come in a year, and there are lots of people with the same name and same middle initial, and the only assurance we have that we've got the right person is if we have a Social Security number. So that's a barrier that is a challenge for us, because we want to make sure that we are, if we're pursuing someone for filing or payment, that we're pursuing the right person. However, let me finish. I appreciate very much the energy that you have in trying to make sure that we use all the resources at our disposal to achieve compliance. And there are some things that have been tried in some other states where licensing boards partnered with the Department of Revenue, and through the licensing board, either encouraged or required certification of tax compliance before they were willing to renew a license. We are trying to explore that with some of the licensing boards to see whether they're willing to do that kind of thing under their general authority to establish criteria for issuing licenses or renewing licenses.
Do you have an estimated date on that exploration that you're going through?
Well, we're being kind of tentative about it, because it's something that some boards are going to say, I'm not sure I've got the legal authority to do. Or others that they may need to process that through with their licensees. But that's a different approach to the issue that doesn't stumble on the barrier of the Social Security numbers. That would be a tool that might be useful to achieve what you're trying to achieve. So I, as you know, we'd be very happy to sit down and work through with you the outcomes that you'd like to achieve and what perhaps some other routes are to getting to those outcomes, because I know that you really have, you've asked the question about the matching, and we've always had the same problems. Disclosure is a problem for us, how much we can even disclose to a licensing board in order to get something from them, and then the limitations they have because they use different identifying numbers for taxpayers, and that this problem of needing to be sure that we're identifying the right person.
Mr. Chair, this we've been around and around this before, and I don't think that it's going to happen during my term in the legislature ever be able to get the type of coordination, cooperation between the licensing agencies and the Department of Revenue. Now, unless I'm sadly mistaken, probably about the only thing that you couldn't share by statute, a revision of the statute, an absolute revision of the statute, the only thing that you couldn't share with another agency would be Social Security information and the income tax information that's on the face of an Oregon tax return. And chances are, probably by statute, you could share the income tax information if you were directed to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, you're right. The prohibition that we have now from disclosure of state income tax information is in state statute.
Okay.
So the legislature can always make changes in what those restrictions are.
Okay, and so then all of the penalties and these other kinds of things, the felonies and the penalties and those sorts of things, probably relate to the Social Security number, which is a federal identifier,
mm-hmm.
And once that's taken off, really, you're not trying to divulge, and no state agency comes to, or it would come to you and say, we want to know what John Doe at 123 Vista in this particular town is earning in income, and you're not, that isn't what I would even propose. My proposal is that if John Doe at 123 Vista is applying for three different health licensing applications and has other business licenses within the state of Oregon, I'd just like to know that John Doe, or even if it's John Doe at 123 Vista somewhere in Washington, California, Idaho, or Nevada that is applying for that licensing application, an out-of-state person, and we've talked about that too, Director,
mm-hmm.
In the past, that if I could just identify those that are on the out-of-state list to say, wait a minute, why are they coming back to Oregon every year, every 2 years, and applying for this licensure? And we don't know whether they're filing any kind of a tax return. And it might be perfectly innocent that they just enjoy having a license to be a construction contractor in the state of Oregon and just enjoy paying the bond. I doubt it, but I got a sneaking suspicion that they probably should be filing a tax return somewhere. And that's all I'm saying is that I'm not asking for any information, not the Social Security number, not the income tax information, to ever be divulged, and not even names and address, to be divulged by your agency back to the CCB, back to the health licensing folks, back to the other people that offer licenses to work in the state of Oregon. I'm just asking that your agency be a little more proactive in gathering that information from the licensing board, because their information is all available to you, is my understanding. Mostly all available to you, is it not?
Who are their licensees is public record.
Right.
The problem is, for the assessor in your county, where the population is fairly small, to achieve a significant change with a manual process translates a little bit differently for us, where we're trying to deal with a mass system, which is why I suggested that we talk about what the result is that you'd like to achieve and see if there aren't some other ways that allow us to do that would help get to that assurance. That it sounds like what you're seeking is assurance that anyone who is getting a license from an Oregon licensing board is in compliance with Oregon income tax law if they're earning income in the state.
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just make this as a suggestion so that you can, you've already sensed my level of frustration, my commitment and exercise in this regard. My concern is that all licensing, all of the privileged licensing that is done in the state of Oregon, and I think as I look around, several of us have licenses of one kind or another here within this particular program. But all of those licenses, if we were uniform in the name of, on the license, the individual's name, not John Doe Plumbing, but John Doe, and maybe John C. Doe, doing business as John Doe Plumbing, and then require an address that was the same address that was used on a tax return, or at least an affidavit or a box that would be checked off to say, on that licensing application, I have filed my most recent Oregon income tax return. Check here, and what that year is. so that at least we have that within the affidavit, because if those folks are lying on the application, that would be prima facie evidence, I would think, not being a lawyer, I would think that would be a prima facie indication that they probably have violated the law in order, not just the income tax law, but violated some rule within that agency in order to procure that license. And it's my concern that a lot of folks that could be, and if you've got a few hundred thousand privileged licenses out in the state of Oregon, even if you found that 20,000 folks were not complying and that they were making rather substantial incomes on the side and not filing tax returns, that could mean tens of millions of dollars to the state of Oregon in just a mix-match merge of some sort, and maybe just requiring through the good offices of the general government committees in the House and the Senate, just requiring that agencies make uniform their applications and make uniform some kind of question. What is the most recent check here if you are current in your Oregon income tax return filings, and what is the most recent year that you have filed? Ladies and gentlemen, we all have a tremendous vested interest in the accuracy and in the true reliance upon a self-assessment system. And without that assurance that everybody on my block is self-assessing correctly, then I think that there's, and it's more critical today, Director Harchenko, than it has ever been. I mean, when I ask it in 1999, you know, that's fine. I'm just a kid wet behind the ears. When I ask it in 2001, you know, it's with a greater degree of concern and angst. But now it's becoming critical, because I believe that there is more opportunity than ever for people to say, I don't know, nobody really cares if I file this Oregon tax return, and I just happen to live in the state of Idaho or Montana or Washington, and just go into the state of Oregon just on weekends or just, you know, for these specific jobs. I'm in and out. No one will ever know the difference. And besides that, I already pay all of my Nevada income tax and Washington state income taxes required of zero. So, you know, I'm probably being compliant. And so Oregon misses out on a great deal. And my concern is that if we need to, Director Harchenko, and I guess the charge that I would lay at your doorstep today, and I had a whole bunch of questions on the information that Brownie McNary had provided me, but my charge to you today would be, what can you do proactively to help us change Oregon revised statutes and to assist us in the attempt to make our systems more uniform, more user-friendly relative to the information being extracted by the Department of Revenue, that we need to be able to make sure that the self-assessment system in Oregon is not violated as a result of the global economic downturn?
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. Any other
questions? I also had some questions on amnesty, but those have all been... Oregon could go into an amnesty program. I'd like to know if we have ever considered that, but the indication is that other states that have gone to amnesty it's been portrayed that it's a higher level of fairness. It's attracted those into the income tax system. I don't know whether you have an opinion on an amnesty, Director Harchenko, but if you did, I'd be happy to hear it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we've talked with the Revenue Committee extensively about amnesty, what kind of impact that would have in Oregon, given the level of work that we do now to try to assure compliance with the income tax law. The information I'm getting from other states is that a substantial amount of the revenue that they're getting is sales tax revenue that had not been reported, and some corporate tax revenue that had not been reported. And so we're watching that carefully, and we'll be reporting to the Revenue Committee on what's happening across the country.
Thank you, Representative Butler. That's it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much for being here. And no more questions or comments.
Before we close the hearing, one thing, Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to mention the particular state license that I hold, outside of my driver's license, does ask for, I believe, and I'll have to look at the renewal form again, but I believe it does ask for my social security number. And if other agencies are doing that, I won't supply mine. I mean, even though it says, I think if I remember correctly, it said it was required, but I won't supply it. And but if there was a, you know, that would be a potential way of identifying what Representative Butler is talking about, is that the release of the Social Security number can only be, for example, to the Department of Revenue. Because that doesn't necessarily mean that there's, that the agencies are compliant, but we hope they are.
Mr. Chair, the requirements around Social Security number are that because it is a federally issued number, the federal government does establish some constraints on what state government agencies can require disclosure of the Social Security number. It can be requested, but if the agency isn't administering a program for which it can require disclosure, then it has to let you know that that's optional. And that's been the problem. We've tried with a couple of agencies to run a match, as Representative Butler was describing, and we ended up with a fairly large number of no matches because there was no Social Security number in the system, that the data that came over from the licensing agency, which would put us in the situation of having to do a manual check. And for some agencies, that's a fairly small number of people, and for other licensing boards, it's going to be a large number of people. And we've tried to put our resource where we think it's going to have the maximum impact, given that we have a fixed number of positions doing the work. But I, as Representative Butler has said, we've talked about this several different times. I absolutely agree with you that that would be an excellent tool. There are simply some hurdles we've got to get over in order to be able to use it. One of them is a uniform licensing form, which agencies are working on now because we want to go to web-enabled registration and renewal. And so that kind of thing, now is the time for that kind of thing to get put into the system, because there will be more uniformity of licensing applications for the vast majority of licenses that are issued by the state. And the opportunity to put a question like you described of, are you in compliance with Oregon income tax, and, you know, how did you last file, name and address, assuming that they haven't moved in between and forgotten that they didn't report the address. We can ask for the Social Security number, but as I said, they may choose not to disclose it. But there are tools now that we can begin using, at least on a trial basis, to see how we're doing with compliance, and which is why I wanted to invite you to talk to us about the result that you're trying to achieve. There may be other tools that we can use that don't have those same limitations, such as asking the licensing board to be more of a partner instead of just a provider of data. So I think we can get a long way towards where you'd like to go using some different tools.
Certainly like to work proactively in that direction.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, committee. See you next year. Have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.